Kate Dearden, and you're listening to the Migration Podcast. Before I tell you about this episode, have you listened to Borders and Belonging yet? It's a podcast produced by the Canada Excellence Research Chair in Migration and Integration Program at Toronto Metropolitan University. Its episodes are focused on the voices and stories of migration that are often overlooked. They just wrapped up season 2, which has episodes on climate change in the Arctic, Japan as a migration state, the rise of digital nomads, and more. So check it out wherever you get your podcast. In this episode, we hear Alexandra Castro talk with Pablo Siriani about the increasing and changing migration patterns of children across Latin America. Pablo talks about how there's been a general increase in the capacity and willingness to deal with migrant child protection in the region. However, he also argues that increasingly xenophobia and public narratives that criminalize migrants are influencing new policies and laws, and this increases vulnerability for all migrants, including children. Pablo, could you please start by telling us a little bit about the dynamics for migrant children in Latin America and the Caribbean nowadays?
Yes, I would say first that for the last at least 10 years and maybe more, there has been an increasing number of children in the context of migration in the Americas and the different process and the different migratory routes. It's not a starting point, but you may remember the 2014 crisis of thousands of unaccompanied children moving north from Central American countries to Mexico and then the U.S. But of course, it started at least 5 or more years earlier. I mean, in that route, in particular in that corridor, about 2014 could be the starting point where more people started to bring into the agenda the discussion of how to deal with an increasing number of children moving. Since then, this phenomenon increases can be seen in the figures of, for instance, the millions of Venezuelans that migrated to countries of the region, where, I mean, they could be 25-30% of people moving children, and also in different migration corridors. What we saw 10 years ago in Central and North America now is a common trend in all the region. That's one thing. But then currently what we see is that this increasing number of children moving in different ways, unaccompanied, separated with some members of the family, with all the families and so on, is taking place. And this is in a context of an unprecedented numbers of people moving across the region. Two main characteristics distinguish this from the past. One is that people are moving to different destinations. I mean, maybe 15, 20 years ago, most of the migration from Latin America was moving north. Now the numbers of people across the U.S.-Mexico border are huge, but it's not the only case. I mean, there are millions of people moving to another country of the region. So there's increasing number of countries that have 4 migration profiles, no? Origin, transit, destination, return. So there is complexity on diversity of the movement of the migration patterns in the region. I mean, there's no precedent like that. That's one characteristic. And the second one is dangerous transit, dangerous journeys, migration control mechanism like detention, deportation, expulsion, the role of criminal actors like trafficking networks, people risking their life. That trend that was more focused on the north now is something that we see in the entire region, in almost all the corridors. Not only for Venezuelans, then people from other regions like African countries, of course, Central America, Nicaraguans, Guatemalans, but also Colombians in Chile or Bolivians in Argentina. So it's a very challenging context because of the number of people that are moving across the region, but also in very vulnerable circumstances in an irregular way. So one main trend and challenge now is how risky is that experience of moving across the region, like the Darien Gap, crossing what is called the vertical border of Mexico and others. And this is not because of a natural phenomenon. There have been a number of policies being implemented, like new visa regimes in the region, some countries moving armed forces to the border, etc., trying to restrict migration that leads to more irregularity.
And what role has the Inter-American Court of Human Rights played in this development on the protection of migrant children with consultative opinions on that? which are really different from the European Court of Human Rights. Do you see a difference or something outstanding from this development impacting those policies you are talking about?
So in Latin America, there are always a very complex combination of measures and decisions and approaches and even contradictory ones in the same country. So it's not necessarily like there was one kind of response. There were a lot of responses, even with different goals. For instance, for a few years, at least till I would say 2019, most of the countries, to some extent, opened the borders to try to ensure that people could move, could enter the country, could stay, could be protected to some extent, formally, informally, but try to protect people, bringing some kind of humanitarian relief, but at the same time, try to control who is entering the country without stopping them. But that changed in 2019, first in few countries like Peru, Chile, and Ecuador, but then also Mexico, Costa Rica, Panama, other countries started to have the visa for Venezuela, and others like agents had a visa obligation before. So that definitely is one of the major cause of the number of people moving and staying in irregular status in many countries of the region. But at the same time, some countries continue with some kind of temporary protection status, like as Colombia did to some extent, to some point in time. I mean, Chile, Ecuador, or Peru, even Panama, or Costa Rica, or Mexico. Sometimes they opened the asylum scheme, like Brazil did, like Mexico, in the first years of the Venezuelan migration crisis did, and so on. Some others continue with like an open policy in terms of regional agreements, as Argentina, as Uruguay, a little bit Brazil too, and us through Mercosur, or Ecuador through UNASUR. But again, this increasing number of people in irregular and risky corridors are the direct consequence of policies, of political decisions. Of course, continue to be a major challenge. Why? Because countries from the south are not like countries of the north in terms of institutional stability, resources, and other capacities for receiving such a number of people. I mean, we're talking about countries where people are on the poverty line of 30, 40, 50 or more percent of population. But when you start to address migration with a very narrow approach and visas and militarization of borders, what you do is increasing the problem rather than addressing them. It, because what's going on now, depending on the country, hundreds of thousands of more people are in irregular status without access to some social services, being scared of being deported, and so on. So coming back to children in this context, what I see is that since 2014, and in some cases even earlier, the region started to have slow but in some way progressive migration policies and to some extent some procedures with contradiction challenges and so on. An increasing role of child protection or child welfare authorities, sometimes at local level, at national level. So in a positive way, there a lot of authorities, programs, initiatives in being implemented nowadays that didn't exist at all 10 years ago. So there are a number of initiatives being implemented that put the migrant children issue into the agenda, into the political discussion, in some actual policies for child protection, trying to ensure that at the border or when it comes to decide the resident permit or expulsion, children's rights are taken into account. Even in the case of public defense authorities, no, they included some kind of less child protection, like the Procuradurías of Children in Mexico, or the Defensoría General de la Nación in Argentina, bringing children's rights to migration cases. Some programs focus on migrant children inclusion at the education services or other services, but there are still a lot of challenges.
And how has the response of the receiving and transit countries in the region been to face this mass migration or this augmentation in the number of migrant children traveling through the continent?
Yes, I mean, when I said before that this region is like complex and with a lot of diversity in terms of policies and practices. In a way, we can say that we have the best and the worst at the same time. I mean, in terms of practices, no? And in the case of the positive ones, the good practices, the region started this century with a very interesting process of progressive reform in terms of policies and laws on migration, I mean, no? So since the Argentina migration law 2003, and then Uruguay 2008, Bolivia 2013, Ecuador, Brazil, Peru 2017, even the Chile one 2021, the Colombian 2022, et cetera, et cetera. So there's very clear progressive reform process in terms of the even recognizing migration as a human right, equal protection in terms of access to social services, regardless of migration status, the duty to promote regularization to facilitate the access to a residence permit, access to justice, due process safeguards, et cetera, et cetera. In the last reforms, maybe in the last 7 years, best interests of the child and child protection are guiding principles of migration law that were implemented or adopted. And in that context, political statement by the states from the region stating that human rights should be like the guiding lens of migration policies, the comprehensive migration policies, regularization, and so on. Also, progressive trend of increasing children's rights to this discussion, to this initiative. Mercosur member states requested in 2011 the Inter-American Court advisory opinion on the protection of children in the context of migration that was adopted in 2014, and it was the first either regional or universal human rights protection mechanism that set up some kind of international standard for protecting children in the context of migration. And it led to some extent to implement or to adopt some regional guidelines, like the Regional Conference on Migration in 2016, you know, with Central and North American countries plus Dominican Republic. The South American Conference, the Mercosur, no different guidelines for protecting children in the context of migration that should lead policies and practices on the ground. So, yes, we have legal tools, we have a political statement, we have more like soft law tools like guidelines and decisions on local or national level, child protection, intervene more and more on migration discussions. But that also, there is the bad practice. No, what I was saying, I mean, political narrative trying to bridge irregularity and criminality that leads to policies instead of facilitating regularization, blocking it, that leads to children and families in very vulnerable circumstances with a lot of difficulties for accessing social rights, social services, even education or other social protection schemes. And then also because of increasing narrative in the region, bringing discussion from the north to the south, externalization, militarization, irregularity as a security threat, and so on. I mean, there's a total contradiction between irregularity and child protection. There's no way that children's rights can be fulfilled and protected if children are in irregular status and the family is in irregular status. So not doing anything, or rather the opposite, blocking the access to a resident permit is a children's right violation, in my opinion. Because it leads to the vulnerability, and it leads to protection issues, social exclusion, and so on. And also this more recent trend of people seeing regularization as sort of amnesty to people that committed serious crime, which is not the case. Rather, the opposite is like people in vulnerable circumstances because of political decisions that restricted the access to avenues for regularization. Due to different factors, it led again to expulsion, families being separated. I mean, moving from the law and the formal protection to the actual practices continue to be a major challenge. There are almost no cases, or very few ones, of course, implementing the advisory opinion standards in terms of best interest assessment, the right of the child to be heard, even in the evaluation of his or her parent should be deported and the family is separated. So there is an important issue there. Some Argentinian courts, Chilean courts, others are prioritizing the sanctionless deportation rather than protecting the right to family unit, the right to family life, even of children that were born in destination countries that are national of those countries, that are Argentinian, that are Chileans, etc. So that's a very regressive trend recently, and it's very worrying. That's one issue. And the last that I will mention as a very important challenge that affects child development, child mental health rights, and others is xenophobia. So xenophobia fueling restricted migration policy, fueling narrative, having legislative proposals in terms of restricting access to health, access to education. And I mean, in some cases, they create or make a regularization scheme program or restriction program for children, but not for the parents. So the parents are not authorized to work. Of course, that impact in children's rights, living conditions, and so on. When you see that, you think, I mean, they didn't understand the children's rights laws in a comprehensive way. So there's a huge challenge.
I think this is really interesting. You're telling us how it is not the lack of legislation or international standards that lead to underprotection of human rights, but it's more about the political willingness to protect these people and their whole family, and not only children. And what's the future then?
I mean, in a positive way, this normative framework, the policies and practices that have been implemented in terms of children's rights could lead to a common sense-based discussion on how our societies can be in 10 or 20 years if we keep on going in the wrong way. I mean, more vulnerability, more irregularity, more xenophobic narrative, and so on. That would lead to more like social exclusion, poverty, insecurity, and all the negative consequences that we know. Or we could uphold, I mean, the best practices and try to come back to this idea of comprehensive, rights-based migration policies, interinstitutional coordination mechanism that is something, again, that is not there. Even the GCM or other process to implement comprehensive policies. So bringing also children, child protection, child welfare authorities to the discussion, education, labor ministries, and so on, we have the chance to go to the positive direction. And maybe this willingness to protect children can reduce this securitized approach, criminalization, and promoting regular avenues and so on, and even implementing intercultural integration programs, preventing xenophobia in schools, and working with children in order to create more cohesive societies in the future. But it's not easy. I mean, the region has been political instability, and so in that context, it's more likely to have xenophobia or the kind of toxic narrative fueling policies on this. So we'll see.
Yes, let's see. Thank you very much, Pablo.
Pablo Seriani is a lawyer and has a PhD in human rights. He is currently the director of the Master of Migration and Human Rights in Latin America and the Caribbean at the National University of Lanús in Argentina. He's also a member of the UN Committee on Migrant Workers. If you enjoy the Migration Podcast, please consider liking and following us. Thanks for listening.